York Environmental Justice Forum, which will take place in Medford this Friday, September 25th. We've been speaking with Joel Eboa, Environmental Justice Manager for Beyond Toxics. And joining us, I believe, is Carl Wilmson of the Northwest Forest Workers Center. Carl, are you there? Not yet.
Okay. How are you doing, Carl? Are you there now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Yes, hey, we Carl. Can. Great. Well, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
And Joel mentioned just prior to you coming on air, the coalition of organizations, and mentioned the Northwest Forest Workers Center. Tell us a little bit about the Northwest Forest Workers Center and your involvement in this task force.
Okay, well, the Northwest Forest Workers Center was founded in Oregon in 1997 as an alliance between forest workers, the tree planters and the thinners and people who do all the work necessary to tend America's forests, not the logging workforce, but the what's often called forestry services, so that the workers in that particular industry, and also harvesters of non-timber forest products, and those include mushrooms, salal, bear grass, all the floral greens, huckleberries, and, you know, hundreds of other non-timber forest products. What the folks, the founding members, realized was that the so-called timber wars of the 1990s, 1980s, and 1990s were all about logging, but there were a lot of other people in the woods doing a lot of really important work, and they were kind of an invisible workforce. And they, the forestry services workers, as well as the harvesters of non-timber forest products, faced a lot of the same similar issues, which included wage theft, no safety training, no health insurance, high injury and fatality rates, and all of those kinds of things. So they started this organization and did a number of things in helping communities gain more voice in the management of America's forest lands, focused largely on public forest lands. And in the past 5 years, I came on board as the executive director in 2009, and we started a promotora program, which Joel mentioned a little bit ago, in which we've trained members of the forest worker community in the Medford area to do trainings and deliver information to forest workers on how to prevent injuries on the job and to learn about their rights.
Now, on one hand... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to ask, on one hand, you would think it would be a no-brainer that minimally there would be some type of education on safety, if nothing else, to prevent any slowdown in the work, not necessarily from the employer's point of view to save money, since they didn't want to give them insurance anyway, but, you know, to avoid slowdowns in the work. So outside of just perhaps financial greed, why were these workers excluded from these basic employee rights?
Well, the workforce is largely immigrant, largely Latino. They have limited English proficiency. They come to this country as not really knowing about their rights in the workplace. They don't really know how management of U.S. forest lands works. They don't know our legal system. And so they're basically in a position where it's easy to take advantage of them. And I think that the employers do that. And incidentally, the workers who come on H-2B visas, which are the so-called guest worker visas, face the same issues as undocumented workers. So there's the guest worker program is set up in such a way that the workers are kept in the dark. They don't know about their rights as well, and they're in a position where the employers can take advantage of them too, and so that's what happens.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Carl. You know, I just wanted to add that they have, you know, these folks already have limited social and political capital, and mm-hmm. when you take, you know, the workers who have been here for a long time are taken advantage of.
Yes.
But then when you implement a program like the H2B program, which is similar to the, you know, the Bracero program that was active mm-hmm. in the 50s, then you really have a recipe for a disaster. Because if the workers who are already here and who have been living in this community for a very long time are being taken advantage of, I can't even imagine what happens if you take a 19-year-old from Sinaloa and you give him an 18-month work visa and then you hand him over to the employer.
Yeah, and the power that the employers have over them is that the way the program is set up is that the worker can only work for the employer who brought him here to work on a specific contract.
Yes. Yep.
And once that contract is done, they have to go back to their home country, whether that's Mexico or Guatemala or wherever. And so if for some, and they can't quit, if they don't like the working conditions or they don't like the pay or they don't like anything about the job, you know, for all the reasons that people will quit a job and try and look for some other job, they can't do that. Because if they do that and stay in this country, they become undocumented. If they quit and don't stay in this country, then, you know, they're not making the money that they were promised. They've spent a lot of money to get here, and so basically they have to make up those expenses that they spent in getting here, and then so quitting is really not an option.
Yep. So we're speaking this morning with Joel Eboa of Beyond Toxics and Carl Wilmson of the Northwest Forest Workers Center about a conference, a meeting in Medford this Friday, September 25th. And this is for either or both of you. In terms of, you expressed very well some of the challenges that the workers face in terms of workers' rights and protection of their rights and their safety. Tell us something about work in terms of educating not only the workers that, but also the larger public and building coalitions, which I imagine is part of the work of this task force and part of the work that both of you do. Joel?
Yeah. I think this coalition work, once again, you know, is so important just because, you know, we can't do it alone. And I think a big part of what's happened in a lot of different movements is it happens alone. And I was just at an event this weekend celebrating Pakun's 30th anniversary, and I was so touched by how many folks were there. And, you know, hearing some of the work that they've done, some of the battles they've overcome in the last couple of years has been just a testament, you know, to the United Farm Workers movement. And I think, you know, specific to Oregon, we have our own, you know, kind of not only United Farm Workers movement, but a wider workers movement that I think we're trying to start here. So I'm hopeful, but I'm also, you know, kind of weary of the obstacles we have ahead. But, you know, once again, I think us creating this partnership for this task force meeting is really important.
Joel, you know, you mentioned being weary and also trying to build some capacity outside of your immediate group. Are there any electeds that are championing your cause, or any other prominent person who might be able to give you more push and a little bit more weight behind the push?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, and Carl, please feel free to talk about this as well. I'm not sure what your experience has been, but for us, you know, we, like I said, this is one of our reemergence into trying to advocate for workers' rights, but through the lens of, you know, of exposure to toxic waste. But, you know, we, like I said, this is the first time in a long time we've done this. So, you know, we've spoken to a number of legislators, but we're hoping that out of, we had our herbicide Sprague campaign this last year in the legislative session, and we had a number of champions there. But I'm hoping that through this task force, we'll be able to identify some natural allies within the legislature.
And who were some of the that attended this last event you had?
Which event?
You said you had a number of electeds at your last
allies in the
allies,
legislature.
Yes,
oh,
in the legislature.
Right, of course.
Who
one
are of some of them?
Is, oh, excuse me. Let me see here. Oh boy, we had a gentleman by the name of. Oh, I'm blanking on his name now.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Let me.
That's all right. Take him over to regroup.
And let Carl come in. In terms of what are some of your thoughts in terms of building alliances, Carl, and what are some of the challenges and allies that you have identified?
Sure. So actually, we work very closely with another nonprofit organization in Southern Oregon called Lomakotsi Restoration Project, which is there. Because there are two sides to the issue. There's the environmental mm-hmm. side and the labor side, and
yes.
they're both together as one. Mm. And Lomakotsi tends to focus a little more on the environmental side, and we tend to focus a little more on the labor side.
Okay.
But what Lomakotsi does is they actually have developed a model of forest ecosystem restoration. Based on holistic principles of sustainable forest management. And so they work closely with communities. They've got a big project in the Ashland watershed, for example. They work with the city of Ashland and the Nature Conservancy and the Forest Service as partners on that. And part of their model of ecosystem restoration is taking care of the workers as well. And so what it shows is that this work can be done in a way that's ecologically sustainable and also done in a way that treats workers well. So that's an important partnership that we have. And we also partner with the Department of Labor, the regional office there in Portland. We have a good working relationship with them because one of the issues that we face is enforcement of the labor laws. The Forest Service, when it lets contracts for doing thinning or tree planting or whatever on national forest lands, has all the provisions in their contracts for requiring the contractors to comply with the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Service Contract Act, the Migrant Seasonal Agricultural Workers Protection Act, and all those acts that do have protections for workers. But the problem is enforcement. And so we've been working with the Department of Labor, Wage and Hour Division, and OSHA on actually getting better enforcement. And part of it has been, of course, funding, the number of agents, inspectors who are out in the field. You know, the Department of Labor is responsible for every industry.
Yes.
And so they're stretched a little thin, but they have had some budget increases and were able to hire more inspectors in the past couple of years. And the director, Jeff Jankos, who was there, he's now moved on to another position in the department, but he was kind of took this up as an issue that he was going to focus on. And so he actually did step up the inspections of forestry contractors in Southern Oregon.
Excellent.
I just wanted to mention really quickly, sorry, Carl, I'll cut you off, is that OSHA is actually one of the folks who need to send a representative to the task force, so we're excited to have them there and learning a little bit more about what's going on.
Excellent. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. We are speaking this morning with Joe Eboa of Beyond Justice and Carl Wimson of Northwest Forest Workers Center. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. And Brian's on the phone. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. How's everybody? So, listen, I do have a comment, you know, and I lived in the Southwest for a long time, and I grew up in Florida. So, you know, I saw the migrant situation, you know, as, you know, and it's actually about what it, you know, the same comments were being made back in the 70s when I was a kid. But, you know,
yes.
my problem is this, and, you know, you can even trace this back to the Woody Guthrie song, you know. But, you know, these people are lured up here by huge businesses. And, you know, from Mexico, Guatemala, and even from other countries, India and the Middle East and everything else. And they're basically enslaved. And these companies, you know, these people just don't cross the border for any reason, you know, in the Mexican region. There are places that will hire and put you know, Mexican workers, guest workers on buses and send them up to Tennessee and Iowa and Idaho and everything else to chicken farms and different industries. And there they're stripped of their rights. A lot of times their passports and abused. You know, it's our fault, you know, and we are not enforcing employment regulations. And, you know, I've seen, you know, I've heard of cases, I've talked to people and everything else. And basically the government, as it stands, is stripped down to very few inspectors, and their enforcement level is so low, and, you know, the threat is always, well, you know, you won't eat, you know, you won't have any food, you won't have any chicken, whatever, if you don't let us do business as usual. Well, these people who hire these, you know, immigrants and immigrant labor should be put in jail, basically, you know. And what it does is, as a low-wage worker myself, when the immigrants' rights are diminished, so are mine.
Yes.
Because, you know, I get that, oh, we can do this to immigrant labor. Why not just do it to American labor? And we wonder why, you know, we're working 20% harder for less money since the 60s. Well, this is why. And we've allowed big business to just walk all over everybody, you know, and they are, you know, slowly but surely, you know, everybody's becoming low-wage workers, and, you know, I could go on and on. But my problem is instead of going out and, you know, helping, you know, we're covering the cost of people who get abused by their employers, you know, by going out and helping these people, and they should be helped. But we should be, at the same time, starting litigation, and it should be constant and demanding that our government inspect these workplaces and talk to these workers about their rights. And that sounds very idealistic, but you know what? That's what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And if the government's not doing it, then they should be held accountable. And ultimately, the employers, I'm sorry to go on, the employers should be accountable, and they are not being held accountable.
Okay. Sounds great points, and let our guests respond.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, I'd like to respond to that. I think the caller brought up a very good point, which is that it takes a number of different avenues or a multifaceted approach, if you will, to address the problem. It's not just an issue of informing workers about their rights, which is very important, because a lot of the improvement is going to have to come from the grassroots. But also there's the policy angle, which is really important. And there is a role for lawsuits. There's a role for talking with the state and federal lawmakers and getting the rules improved. The Northwest Forest Workers Center, my organization, has been involved with the Low Wage Workers Legal Network for a number of years in a whole series of lawsuits against the Department of Labor to get better protections for the H-2B visa program, which is, as I mentioned before, the guest worker program that under which forest workers come and work in the United States.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's an excellent point. We need to take an approach that brings a lot of leverage from a lot of different angles to the issue.
On that note, I wanted to mention really quickly, you know, I was thinking recently, like I said, I went to Pecun's celebratory 30th anniversary event, and Cesar Chavez's son was there, and he was speaking about his father's legacy, and a big part of what Cesar Chavez did in the past, and I think is going to work for us again in the future today, is you know, taking a multi-pronged approach, not just organizing workers, you know, for the grassroots level, but at the same time having that be an avenue to put public pressure on legislators, as well as kind of, you know, change hearts and minds of your everyday, you know, person. And I think part of what we're trying to do with this event too is kind of give, humanize, you know, the approach, while at the same time putting pressure on our, on the folks who are responsible for keeping workers safe, a little view of what's really going on.
One of the things that I'm curious about, because I know it's really hard to build alliances, and it is slow, and I'm thinking of what you were saying earlier, Joel, about being tired, but it would seem to me that one avenue is the medical field, and I'm thinking of partnerships perhaps with any medical organization that has in the past looked at or been allied with this. For example, like Physicians for Social Responsibility. Have you had any success in that area, or is this still part of that getting that that basic groundswell together? Either one.
Well, the Northwest Forest Workers Center has not worked directly with organizations in the medical field, but we do, there are some organizations out there like the Northwest Primary Care Association and the Migrant Physicians Network, and we have participated in some of those meetings, and so we're aware of their work and they're aware of ours, but not, we haven't worked directly together on things yet, but that's definitely an important avenue to follow for sure.
We've, you know, in our, like I said, I mentioned briefly before, we'd have an herbicide, you know, campaign of folks being sprayed. And
right.
I just remembered the names. It's Senator Michael Dembro and Ann Leininger. But anyways, you know, on that same note, a big part of what we used to kind of legitimize the case of herbicide spraying and how bad it is for people is, you know, we did contact some doctors, and some doctors are very scared. I think a big part of it is some doctors have a lot of pressure under the pharmaceutical company, and as well as, you know, a lot of our healthcare system is privatized, so they also have pressure to kind of stay within the lines, within their own facility. So unless you have, you know, your own independent clinic, or you have, you know, the autonomy to kind of make some cases or take some stances, I think it's difficult to outreach to the medical community, because I think a lot of them are censored.
What kind of response did you get to that? I know there was a whistleblower video that showed the workers being sprayed with weed killers. Did you get any kind of response from that?
In terms of the medical field?
In terms of the medical field. And then just, you know, I know sometimes it's difficult because the public is overwhelmed sometimes with bad news. But this, in this day and age, and as you had said earlier, Carl, you know, or our caller had said, this is an issue people have been working on since at least the 60s. And for this to still be going on is really a shame. And I would think that people would recognize that we should be much further along in terms of caring for all workers at this point. And I was just curious, did you get any kind of response in terms of support from that video?
Yeah, we, you know, I remember I was actually, you know, we remember that, seeing that video and speaking with the gentleman who sent it to us, and, you know, we got, we did get some response, like, you know, our primary avenue through that was working with Rob Davis for the Oregonian, and, you know, it was, we got some response from some, you know, some senators, and the legislature took their stance and kind of condemned, you know, the what happened to this gentleman, what happened to these workers. But at the same time, you know, when, like, a video like this is incredible in the sense that it shows, you know, the video speaks for itself. And, you know, it was pretty quiet through the medical field, but we heard a lot of noise through some other organizations as well as through the legislature. You know, some folks took their stance, other ones didn't. And, you know, I think it's really hard because a worker like that is oftentimes attacked by employers or by industry.
Yes.
You know, they're kind of seen as, you know, someone who's unstable, and I think that that's why it's so important to kind of continue to try to foster these relationships with the medical field, with legislators, with community partners, with other organizations, so that, you know, when you do take a stance and you get pushed, you have folks to kind of keep you up.
We were speaking this morning with Joe Eboa of the Beyond Toxics.
Beyond Toxics.
Okay, great. And Carl Wilson of Northwest Forest Workers Center. And we're speaking particularly about the issues they confront, but also about a gathering this Friday in Medford, and I will have them speak a little bit more details about that. But also I want to remind you, if you would like to call or have a question, give us a call here at 503-231-8187. And just prior to that, both of you were talking about coalition building and talking about the intersectionality of issues, labor, health, medical. I'm wondering what type of work or coalition work or support you have from traditional environmental groups on these issues, and are they part of this task force?
We have, there's some folks who come to the task force, but, you know, not as many as we'd like. Mostly we have folks, you know, who are kind of trying to beginning to get into this. So, like, there's a Pacific, not the Pacific Rivers, there's another organization, the Rivers Council up, and I believe it's Tualatin, somewhere in the area. But, you know, they're kind of also trying to look into the effects of pesticides with farm workers. But, you know, I think there's a big division in kind of in the sense of the workload.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of these conservation groups are doing amazing works with, you know, with whether it be water or, you know, saving wolves and all these other things. And I think everyone has their role to play, but oftentimes, you know, like the Oregon Conservation Network gets together and we all call out each other what's going on, and it's little things like that, I think, kind of make a difference. And you know, if we're not working together, we at least know what each other's doing, and we can help each other in that sense.
Okay.
But I'd like to see more coalition work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So from what I'm hearing, it in part that you respect, and each one has their own particular issues. I'm wondering if there's been any conflicts in terms of occasional conflicts of interest or not.
Overlaps of any kind.
And if not, that's fine. I was just wondering if there's sometimes issues.
Like anything else, you know, I've only been doing this work since December. And, you know, what I've seen so far is that we're all fighting for the sun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that oftentimes you know, it's good to advocate for yourself, and it's good to advocate for, you know, what you're trying to do. But at the same time, I think I wonder, and I ask myself this question, is, you know, is in trying to advocate for your own organization's goals, are we missing out on the potential to make some wide sweeping changes? And that's kind of the balance, right? You work too much with somebody and you might not get too far, but you don't work enough with somebody, well then there's also problems with that.
Well, that sounds like a good question to ask at your upcoming conference.
So share something about the conference, where it's at, what time, who's invited.
And I noticed that you have free transportation, and so how people can access that.
Yeah, can I just jump in and respond to the question about coalition building?
Yes, Carl.
Before we get into that?
Mm-hmm.
So in response to your question, we have not had conflicts with environmental groups, but as Joel was saying, there's support for what we're doing, but the other organizations are, you know, so focused on their own mission that they don't necessarily get involved. I would like to see more coalition building, because from our perspective, the issue of the treatment of the land and the treatment of people are interconnected.
Yeah.
If you
yes.
see the land and people as both just inputs to industrial processes, then you're going to exploit both of them, and that's what we see happening under our current economic system.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of systemic change that needs to happen, is to change that basically, you know, huge emphasis on profit making. Mm. And turn the system around into one that actually is more compassionate to the land and more compassionate to people.
Yes, yes, yes. Very, very good. Thank you, Carl. And about the gathering this Friday.
Yeah, we are starting at the task force is from the beginning of our public presentation starts at 11:30, and it's going to be a panel of workers' rights advocates. Carl will be on there, the director of Bakun will be on there, the director of UNITE, and then myself. You know, I have the privilege of also speaking next to these titans, so I'm a little nervous, but I hope I do okay.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you do fine.
And then after that, we're going to have, you know, a little time for some lunch, and we're going to have a presentation by Julie Samples about the state of migrant workers. She's a lawyer for the Oregon Law Center in the Hillsborough area, and she's done quite a amount of extensive research, I believe, in conjunction with the Northwest Forest Worker Center. Is that correct, Carl?
We do work with the Oregon Law Center, yes.
Yes, and so I'm excited to kind of hear her research she's done around indigenous farm workers and the other work that they do. And then at 2:00, from 2 to 3:30, the really exciting stuff happens. We're opening it for testimony for folks to kind of give their lived experience about their exposure to toxic waste and to toxic chemicals in the workplace. And we're, like I said, we're working very hard with our partners to make sure that we give folks the opportunity and know, as well as the backing that they're going to be okay and they're going to be able to talk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, safety is very important.
Yes. And so also, as I was mentioning, there's transportation for people who want to attend. And can you mention how to access that?
Yeah, just give me a call.
And your number?
That 541-465-8860. And we're having transportation from Eugene and from Salem.
Great.
And also, there's it'll be a bilingual event, correct?
Yes, of course. We have I think around 35, maybe more headsets, and we have a translator coming as well. So anytime there's English spoken, we're going to have a translator as well as you know, hopefully when the workers talk about their experience, there's also going to be translation as well, because we want to make this as accessible as possible for folks.
Excellent. Looking ahead, say 5 or 10 years, and I know this might, you know, just dreaming, where would you like to see us at in terms of workers' rights and environmental justice? So just dream a bit.
Yeah. Go ahead, Carl.
I'd like to see the workers unionized.
Mm.
That would go a long ways towards empowering workers. I'd also like to see comprehensive immigration reform passed, so that we can help the folks who are here undocumented to get on a path to legal residency. That would go a long way also towards ending the abuse, because a lot of the abuse is because of the fear that undocumented people have. You know, if they speak up or, you know, quote unquote, act up in any way, they'll be deported.
Yes.
And the same with the H-2B, all the guest worker programs, actually. I'd like to see those strengthened so that workers have the option to, if they're unhappy with an employer, the first employer that brings them here, that they have the option to shop around and find a better situation for themselves. Those are three things that I would like to see. Those are three things that I would like to see in 5, 10 years, in 5.
Those are the
10 years rather than later.
No goals, and no goals. What about you, Joel? And
no, 5 to 10 years, well, you know, 5 to 10 years will be forward. You know, I'd like to see, you know, once again, I think, you know, Carl and I can sit here all day and let you know what we think should happen, but I think ultimately what I would like to happen is for more of the general public to know, to kind of have a, you know, transparency in terms of the way our nation works, and you know, not just in environmental justice, but also in workers' rights. I'd like for folks who are most affected to know, like, know their rights, mm-hmm. for there to be investment not only in themselves but their children.
Yes.
You know, I keep thinking of the children of these migrant workers, of the folks who live near toxic waste, and you know, like, I know it's kind of cliche to say that their future, but they really are. So, you know, my interest is primarily in investing in them and investing in their capacity to advocate for themselves and to advocate for their families and to advocate for a world that's more compassionate and more willing to put people above profits. And I think once we really commit to putting people above profits, all of these problems that we kind of see pop up are slowly going to be diminished.
Excellent. I really appreciate the work that both of you and your organizations are doing, and it's monumental, important work, and I just hope you continue on, that you'll be encouraged, and just thank you so much. Before we let you go, could you tell our listeners how they might contact you and your organizations once more? Carl?
Sure. We're the Northwest Forest Worker Center. Our website is www.nwforestworkers.org. Our phone numbers are 510-525-4157. And our Oregon number is 541. Hang on a second. 541-499-0626.
Excellent.
And se habla español en la oficina en Medford.
Thank you. And Joel, once more?
Yeah. You just go to www.beyondtoxics.org. We're located in Eugene. Our phone number is 541-465-8860. Or you can contact me directly at jeboa@beyondtoxics.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, and want to remind all listeners for this conference in Medford Public Library this Friday, beginning at 11:30, Fairness for the Land and the Worker 2015 Oregon Environmental Justice Forum. Thank you so much, Joe Eboa of Beyond Toxic and Carl Wilson of the Northwest Forest Workers Center. And coming up,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Coming up at KBOO is the Omo Variety Hour, and I just lost a reflection on the Republican debates and how GOP candidates push a worldview that panders to fear and scapegoating Muslims and immigrants. Arun Gupta talks about the recent teacher strike settlement, I hope, in Seattle, and how it built on the precedence of the strikes of teachers in Chicago and Portland to build a new unionism. And they asked the question, what kind of love could save the world? Thank you so much, KBOO members, for your generous support of this community radio station. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm Celeste, and I thank you. Have a great day.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival, September 26th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Park Rose High School West Athletic Field in Portland. The Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival remembers and celebrates the art, music, personality, and legacy of the great Kaw Creek musician Jim Pepper. This year's performers include One Heart, featuring Jan Michael Looking Wolf, the Delbert Anderson Trio, Four Directions Drum, Big B, and many more. Again, that's the third annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival, September 26th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Park Rose High School West Athletic Field, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Gaining Ground, a feature-length documentary film by Elaine Velasquez and Barbara Bernstein on Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st at Cinema 21 in Portland. Gaining Ground tells the stories of farmers making extraordinary changes in their farming practice so they can feed their local communities sustainably grown produce and grains. The documentary interweaves experiences of urban farmer activists, large farms in transition, and small family farmers. Again, that's Gaining Ground, Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st, at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from EcoPlumber, providing sustainable plumbing services to Portland and the metro area, including remodels, repipes, and repair, as well as green projects such as rainwater or gray water harvesting, and alternative materials such as 100% VOC-free green pipe. Information at 503-342-8244 or eco-plumber.com.